Couldn't something better have been said? If you read the book of Judges, you'll find that the author of Judges was sought always to tell something noble about men. I guess the book of Judges has more punchy little lines complimenting men than any other book in the Bible. Yet all that could be said of the men in this text is that each rode on a donkey. It said that there were 70 sons and grandsons of Abdon, who was the judge. By the way, the judge in those days was the ruler. The judge ruled. The word judge meant the same thing as king or president. These boys lived in the White House. These boys walked with royalty. These boys had every advantage of life, as we call advantage. Well, I'm not sure what we call advantage is really an advantage. But it all can be said that these fellows, each of them, rode on a donkey. That's all it says about them. Yet each could have done so much. They had the advantage of being in the ruler's family. Each was royalty. Each lived in the palace. Each attended the finest educational institutions known in the land. Each had every opportunity to achieve greatness. You know, look at me. There's always a Goliath for a David to slay. There's ever a roaring lion for a young Samson to tear in pieces. There are plenty of people for a Jonathan to befriend. There are ample Red Seas for a Moses across. There are many arks for a Noah to build, and enough Ninevehs where every Jonah can find a place to preach the message of grace. There are plenty of wrongs that these men could have made right. There are abundant opportunities for their heroic service. They could have guided chariots. Look, these fellows riding on donkeys. I don't understand that. There are chariots they could have ridden, which they could have ridden. There were the finest horses, prancing horses, and the finest steeds in the land. These fellows lived in the palace. Anything they wanted could be this. And yet, these guys contented themselves just to ride on donkeys. Brother, I don't understand that. I don't understand why you wouldn't want to go high and aim high and set your goal to do something in life. You know who I admire? I'm going to call his name. I admire Vaughn Glover. Vaughn Glover is a man who's been in this church, I imagine, 20 years or more. He's a middle-aged man. When he was in his middle years, he decided he was going to be a lawyer. Now, there are many guys that have decided at 40, 45, and 35, 40, and 45. They're going to be lawyers or doctors, but Vaughn Glover's not just one of many guys. He's Vaughn Glover. And Vaughn Glover said, I am going to be a lawyer. Now, he had a wife, he had a family, but he said, I'm going to be a lawyer. So he started to college, middle age, went to college. And night after night after night after night, he went to college. And for years, Vaughn Glover has been saying, I'm not going to be normal. I'm not going to be usual. I'm not going to be average. I'm going to rise above the normal, above the usual, above the average. I'm not going to stay where just in mediocrity. Oh, listen, I don't understand it. I can't comprehend it. Why anybody wouldn't want to be the best somebody he can be in the world? Vaughn Glover said, well, I've watched him through these years. And I've waited for that year when he said, I'm too busy. By the way, Vaughn Glover decided to write articles. You don't know this. But he decided to write articles. He submitted one of those articles to a national magazine, and they printed it. And Vaughn Glover started writing short stories. I think Western short stories. Western short stories. And you don't know this, but sitting in this auditorium this morning is one of the best writers of short stories for Western stories in America. And he just said, God has put me here, and I've got 80 more or less to be here, and I'm not going to just sit and eat and drink and buy and sell and marry and get in marriage. I want to leave a contribution when I'm gone. I'm going to do it. By the way, if I'm not mistaken, this next May, Vaughn Glover becomes a lawyer. He gets his law degree. I'm saying, next May. Now, I don't understand you young people. I don't understand it. You say, well, I just want a good job to make good money so I can enjoy the nice things of life. Well, the folks in a world who enjoy the nice things of life are the most wretched, miserable people in the whole world. I'll tell you who's happy. A fellow's happy that says, I'm going to make a contribution. Is the world a better place because of you? Do you stand among the faithful, brave, and true? Do the lost see Christ in you? Does your life ring true? Is the world a better place? Listen, I'll guarantee you there are enough rivers to cross. There are enough mountains to climb. There are enough battles to fight. There are enough Goliaths to defeat. There are enough Red Seas to cross. There are enough places that need help. There are enough hungry mouths to feed and cold bodies to clothe. There are enough victories to win and battles to fight. I'll guarantee you, I don't understand somebody just said, I just want to be a good citizen and feed my body and clothe myself and have a nice house to live in. Brother, there's more in life than that. There's more in life. Plenty of wrongs these men could have made right. They had opportunities. They could have guided chariots. They could have mounted a royal steed. And they were content to have the luxury of royalty and the royalty of luxury, and let the Holy Spirit search for one sentence biography to come up with. And all the Holy Spirit, the omniscient Holy Spirit, could think of is these 70 men rode 70 donkeys. I don't understand it. Good night! Listen, if anybody in this world has had an opportunity to do something with your life, it's the folks sitting in this room right now. There's not a church on the face of God's earth that has had more opportunities. Look, we have a nationwide pastor school. We have a nationwide youth conference. We have a college that's known around the world. We have a nationwide ladies spectacular. We have a fine school system. We have every opportunity. It'll have to be a flop. Well, I love that story. I love that story about a fellow who ran in the Olympic Games. I'm trying to think of his name. I'll get it in a minute. Anyway, he was 100-yard dash champion. The Olympic Games, about 1928. Pollard, I think was his name. He won the 100-yard dash. He came back to Cleveland, Ohio, and they had a parade in his honor. And while the parade was going on, little skinny black boy, watched that 100-yard dash Olympic champion. He watched him as he was applauded in the great parade. And the little black skinny boy walked up to this Olympic 100-yard dash champion and said, "Gee," and said, "I sure do like the way you won that 100-yard dash. I wish I could be a hero someday." And that 100-yard dash Olympic gold medal champion looked at that little skinny boy and said, "Son, you can be." That little boy's name was Jesse Owens. Jesse Owens decided he could be. He began to grow and practice and train. And one day, in Germany, with Adolf Hitler watching, that little skinny black boy lined up to represent his nation in the Olympic Games. And Jesse Owen became the 100-yard dash champion and did exactly what his hero had done. And he came back home. They had a big parade. And Jesse Owen, little old black skinny boy, had a big parade in his honor. Standing down, looking up at him, was a little black boy named Bones Dillard. Little Bones Dillard ran up to Jesse Owens and said, "Mr. Owens, I sure like the way you won the Olympic championship." Mr. Owens looked down and his mind wandered back to that day when he was at the parade for the champion. He looked and he told the same words to Bones Dillard that were told to him years ago. He said, "Young man, you can be a champion." Little Bones Dillard said, "No, I'm just a poor little skinny black boy. But I sure admire you, Mr. Owens." And Jesse Owens said, "You can. You can do it. You can do it. You can do it." Bones Dillard lined up 8 years later, representing the Stars and Stripes in the Olympic Games, and Bones Dillard won the championship. You know what I'd like to be? I'd like to be the guy that stands up here week after week after week and says, "You can do it. You can do it." You can. You can do it. I'd like to say to you young people on the buses who ride on buses and go home to a place without a dad and mom to read your little Sunday school book or ask you what happened in Sunday school because they could care less, I'd like to stand up here and be the guy that says, "You can do it. You don't have to live and die and have it said about you, only he rode a donkey. That's all, he rode a donkey." Here's 70 guys that grew up in the palace. Their dad was the royal leader. Their dad was royalty. They had all the advantages. And their granddad was royalty. And these guys had every opportunity in the world. And all it was said about them. These 70 fellows rode on 70 donkeys. I'd like to be the man stands up here and looks in the face of you high school students. I'd like to look at you in the face and say, "You can do it. You can do it. You can do it. You can do it." I'd like to stand in the face of you Hiles Anderson College students and say, "You don't have to wash out and go home. You don't have to be a flop or a fit." Every time a young man, pardon me, a male comes in my office and says, I've got to go home. And I say, "Why, son?" And he says, "Well, I don't have a job. I got to go home." And I say, "Are you married?" He says, "No, I'm not." Boy, I want to grab him by the neck and shake him good and hard and say, "Man, I'd be ashamed to go back home. I would, I would." Well, I mean, here's the story about your life at Hiles Anderson College. He washed out. I'd go over here and stay in a rescue mission. I'd get me a job digging ditches. I'd get me a paper route. I'd get me a couple of apples and sell them on the street and start me a fruit stand. I would not go home and bow my head between my legs and say, "Everybody else made it, but I couldn't. I'm going to do more in life than just ride a donkey." You can too. I used to sit in church, and this is worth your hearing. I used to sit in church, Brother Colston, my church, where I grew up, and I love it, and you know I do. And I love the memory of my preacher. I used to sit in my church on a Sunday morning with 1,100 or 1,200 people sitting there in the audience, and there were 4 or 5 converts, and they were happy about it. And I used to say, "These people aren't being mobilized. There ought to be a church somewhere where the people do it. There ought to be a church somewhere." And I'd sit back in the back. Little old 92-pound weakling of an introvert. I've always had this amazing physique you see before you today. I used to sit back there back yonder when I was a teenage boy. 92 pounds of gristle. And I used to sit back there and I used to say, "I don't understand why 1,000 people can't win more than 4 or 5 folks a week. I don't understand that. Somewhere ought to be a church where dozens come to Christ and the people do the job 7 days a week." I used to sit in a Christian college, least likely candidate in that college to ever mount anything. And I used to sit there in that college and I used to say, "There ought to be a college somewhere that mobilizes its student body into a great soul-winning army." I used to preach as a young man in Christian colleges. I used to sit there in a college, in a church somewhere. And I used to read about that church having 12 converts a Sunday and hundreds and maybe several thousand Christian students in there preparing for the ministry and full-time service plus the faculty. And I said to myself, "I don't understand this. There ought to be a Christian college somewhere where the professors go soul winning. Ought to be a Christian college somewhere where the students are mobilized like a mighty soul-winning army to get the job done and move a whole area for God. I used to sit in colleges across this nation and say, somebody ought to do it. I used to sit in church on Wednesday night. When I grew up, a handful of people would show up, maybe 100 people in a church that ran 1,200 in Sunday school, maybe. And I used to say as a little teenage lad, sitting back in the back almost apologizing for living, ought to be a church somewhere where the house is filled on Wednesday night. Ought to be one. I couldn't understand it. On the back of my mind, I was saying, it ought to be done. It ought to be done. It ought to be done. I used to drive through the ghettos and say to myself, there ought to be a church that reaches those dear people that live in those houses. I used to drive through poor sections of town. You see little boys and girls playing barefoot on a winter morning outside. My soul would burn and my heart would burn. And I'd say, where's the church? Where's the church? I know where she is. She's busy singing her sevenfold amens. She's busy having her candles burning. She's busy a bunch of bathrobe-wearing ministers walking down the aisle holding candles. Somebody ought to get out here and reach these young poor people for Christ. I used to burn in my soul. Somebody ought to do it. I used to see my pastor baptized once every month, first Sunday night of every month. And then only 6 or 8 people. And as he'd baptized, all of a sudden I'd sit in the audience and I'd say, I don't understand this. There are 1,000 of us sitting out here tonight. 30 days. We got 6 or 8 folks to baptize in 30 days. I don't understand it. Looks like to me, somebody ought to stand up there and tell us we all ought to do it. And I used to say to myself, there ought to be a church somewhere that baptizes every Sunday. I would sit at the table on a Thanksgiving day and eat only a decent meal we'd had in months. I mean that's the truth. I used to sit there at the table and I used to think, I wonder why the church only does it on Thanksgiving. And I used to sit there at the table and eat as a poor little boy. And I used to say there ought to be a church somewhere that feeds hungry people 365 days a year. And then, one day, I said, there's going to be that kind of church. Somebody's got to build it. Somebody's got to do it. Somebody's got to live by day and work by day and work by night. Somebody's got to stay up while others are asleep. Somebody's got to work while others play. Somebody's got to put his shoulder to the wheel. Somebody's got to do it. And one day, bless God, I said, I'll do it. I'm not just going to be a Sunday morning reverend wearing a kimono. Not going to do it. Not going to do it. Not going to do it. I can't comprehend people just willing to live and die and let it be said they rode a donkey. They rode a donkey. That's all the Holy Spirit. That's all that omniscience could think about. Good enough to say they rode a donkey. You know what? Listen to me. One day I was preaching at the Bill Rice Ranch. Let me go a step further. I was preaching at the Allegheny Sunday School Convention in Allentown, Pennsylvania, years ago. A fellow walked up to me and he said, Dr. Hiles, could I talk to you? And I said, no, sir, can't. I'm about to preach. He said, after the service. I said, no, sir, can't do that. I've got an appointment. He said, tomorrow morning after you preach the closing message, could I drive you to the airport? I said, if you'll get my bags and put them in your car... I'll let you drive me to the airport. He didn't find the car where my bags were. I got through preaching, had about 15 minutes to get to the airport to catch a plane. He didn't do it, so I got in the car and asked the other fellow to drive me. And the fellow walked up and said, you said I could drive you to the airport. And I said, I can't do it now because you didn't get the bags and put them in your car. I got to the car, and this fellow was waiting on me, same guy, the airport, waiting. He looked at me, and he said, Dr. Hiles, my name is John Byler. He said, I'm not used to begging folks to talk to me. He said, I own several corporations and I'm a man of some means. He didn't tell me he was a millionaire. If he had, he could have driven me to the airport. I'd have walked to the airport with him. I'd have driven him to the airport in a cab. I'd have canceled my flight. Anyway. So, I talked in a few minutes at the airport. Had to catch a plane. John Bider and I were at Bill Rice Ranch. He was there as a customer, and I was there as a main speaker several years ago. Driving back, he drove me to the airport that day, by the way. I got more sense with the passing of the years. John Bider said, Dr. Howells, what could I do to make my life count? And I said, John, I said, use your money to the glory of God. I'm not asking you for a dime, and I wouldn't do it. But I said, there are missionaries today who are destitute for buildings on foreign fields. There are missionaries all over the world this morning who could reach the people if they had somebody to send them enough money to build a building. I said, John, build a building for a missionary on a mission field. John said, what could I do for Howells Anderson College? And I said, John, our need is a chapel. And John Byler contacted me later and said, Russell Anderson and I have gotten together. We're going to build that chapel for you, an auditorium. And that's where we got the Byler Auditorium, the campus of Howells Anderson College. Wait a minute. John got to where he recently. He got to where, by the way, active man, owns big farms and manufactures big equipment. But John got to where he couldn't walk too well. He got a little limp. Something happened to the bottom of his spine. He got to where he would drag a foot. Had surgery not long ago. Paralyzed one of his legs. Dr. Dennis Streeter told me last night that John Byler's doing well now. Says John can, with a brace on his right leg, he can walk 100 feet. 100 feet. I saw John over in Maryland not long ago. He talked to me. And I said to him, John, as long as you live, and after you're gone, as long as there's a Howells Anderson College that's fundamental, young people be sitting on in a building that you provided. And young preachers will be getting on fire for God in a building you provided. Boy, if I had $1 million this morning or $100,000, I'll bind you one thing. I wouldn't put it in the bank just to make some interest. I'd put it in heaven's bank to make spiritual interest if I were. I just understand it. Comprehend it. Why do people ride on donkeys when the stable's filled with horses and chariots? Why did these men, reared in royalty in a palace, with their dad and granddad as the ruler of the whole kingdom, think what they could have done? Boy, I wish somebody this morning would let the fire of God burn in your soul, and I wish something would click inside you, and I wish some young man would say this morning, with the grace of God, I'm not going to swim down here on the bottom of the ocean. I'm going to rise to the top. I'm going to do something. I'm not going to let my life be out. Feed my stomach, clothe my body, feed my mouth, clothe my body, feed my mouth, clothe my body. Ha, 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 party, 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 ho, 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 ho. Live it up, live it up. Make money, feed, eat, 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 dress, dress, eat, dress, eat, dress. There's something bigger. There's a world out there. You could change it if by the grace of God you would. 70 young men could have changed the whole nation. What is it said about them? They had 70 donkeys and rode them. Men and young men, you could be proud of yourself if you wanted to. You could be happy. Please don't misunderstand me. I count not myself to have apprehended. Nor do I consider myself greatness in any sense of a stretch of the imagination. But if I died today, first place I'd meet thousands of people in Glory Land are waiting on me. I've sent there. Please forgive me for sounding boastful. I'm not. But I've worked when others slept. And I've worked when others played. And I've kept busy. But you wait till I get to glory. You wait till all those tens of thousands of people that I've set up there. You wait till they have a big parade of me when I arrive. I'm going to have a heap of fun playing. My playing's coming later. I'm not against having some fun. I'm against that being the big thing in life. I'm not against you making money. I'm against you just making it to put in the bank somewhere. I'm not against you eating. I think it's good to eat and enjoy it myself. And we'll do it this afternoon about 3 o'clock. Shut up soon enough. We'll do it. I'm not against having a nice wardrobe and good clothes. I'll tell you I'm against. I'm against living to eat and living to drink. Brother, I believe in drinking to live and eating to live and dressing to live. Why? I want to leave something when I'm gone. There are 8 million books spread across around this world. I've got literally hundreds of thousands of tapes that are played all over America. And if I died today, they'd still be playing. And my books would still be spreading around this world like a rope or chain. There's a college out there that still have classes tomorrow morning. If I died today, you could be happy. If you wanted to, you could be a Christian. You don't have to go to hell. You could be a Christian if you wanted to. I'll tell you a story I've never told. Finish. When I got out of the Army, World War II, I was married and I couldn't find a job. Had to have a job. My dad, who at that time was pretty close to the age I am now, maybe a couple of years older. My dad was, he laid oak floor for a living. I mean, just with a hammer or a rig axe. He spent his life laying oak floor. So they didn't have automatic oak floor layers in those days. And then if he didn't have any floor to lay, he'd hang drywall. Sheetrock, we called it. He died on a sawhorse, hanging sheetrock on the ceiling of a house. Fell off the sawhorse, dead at the base of it. And my dad said to me, son, if you want to, I'll let you work with me. Well, I didn't know my dad. I hadn't talked to him much in my life. In the first place, I wanted to get to know him. My dad had worked enough days to get enough money to drink over the weekend. I got a job with him, laying oak floor. And by the way, I was just a kid out of the Army. But Brother Larry, I decided I was going to be the best oak floor layer in Dallas County. I'd never laid a bit of it. And bless your little heart, in 6 months, I laid more oak floor, more squares of oak floor. I could put down, and Al, this is the truth, I could put down on a good day, an 8-hour day, 8 squares of oak floor with nothing but eight casing nails and a hammer or a rig axe. And boy, that's a heap of oak floor laying in one day's time. I don't understand anybody. You're going to be an oak floor layer? Lay the most! My dad was so proud of me. He used enough to get a bunch of old cronies together. He'd say, my son lays more oak floor than anybody in the county can. One day, it was 109 degrees. We were laying oak floor right across the street from the Highland Park High School. north of Dallas, not far from SMU campus. Right up, the street, the Highland Park High School was right across the street. It was 109 degrees. And my dad said, "Son, let's rest a while." Dad was a big man. Giant fellow. Big beer belly. We sat down for a while, and my dad started to talk. He said, "Son, I could have been more than this. I don't understand. There's no more. Nothing wrong about being an oak floor layer or a drywall hanger. I love the profession." He wasn't talking about that. He was talking about his life. He said, "Son, I could have been more than this." He started reliving his life. He said, "We had a little grocery store in Italy, Texas." He said, "Your mom and I owned it." He said, "Son, I thought maybe someday I'd have a big grocery store, just a little bit, small building, metal building. But," he said, "Son, the depression hit and I turned to liquor." And he said, "I could have been something." He said, "Son, there's something about my life you don't know about." He said, "I used to be an elder in a Methodist church." He said, "I used to get up on Sunday morning and put the shoes on Earlene's feet and help dress her and take Earlene and Hazel to a Methodist church." I said, "Dad, did you ever hear the gospel and get saved?" Dad said, "No, I never have been saved." But he said, "I was an elder on the board of the Methodist church. Your mama and I used to sit together in church and we used to take the children." He said, "You never knew me like that." Dad said, "I could have been something if the depression hadn't ruined me." And I stood up and looked him straight in the eye. And I said, "Dad, I want to be what you could have been. I want to be what you could have been. And Dad, I want to be what I could have been." Most of you can't write books to sell. But you can be what you could have been. Most of you never will stand behind a pulpit and preach to thousands of people, but you can be what you could have been. Most of you will never be president of a college. Or most of you will never board airplanes to travel across the country to preach. Or most of you will never be mayor of a town or governor of a state. But God had something in mind when He put you in the world. I'll guarantee you, it was more than riding a donkey. And it was more than eating. And it was more than collecting pictures of presidents and putting them in a bank so you can someday die and let your kids hate each other's guts because they're fighting over your remains. Like a buzzard, bunch of buzzards trying to gather around the carcass, pulling at the dead body and the entrails and the intestines of an old animal but dead, that's burning with the summer heat on a highway. Your kids gather around. Listen, you could be a John Ballard. Or you maybe couldn't make a lot of money. But you could be what God meant you to be. Closer I get to the end, and I don't feel close to the end yet, but I can see the bottom of the hill, and I can see my friends and my preacher brethren reaching it. And the closer I get to seeing the end, the more I just want to leave all I can and do what I can. A tent or a cottage? Why should I care? They're building a mansion for me over there. father is rich in houses and lands. He holdeth the wealth of the world in his hands. Why, in the name of common sense, do we get ourselves so wrapped up in what we put in this hole in our mouths and what we put on these frames of ours and what kind of a piece of metal is around us while we drive from one place to the other? Why, in the name of common sense, can't we look at life and say, by the grace of God, I only live once on earth, and I'm going to live to the fullest I am going to be what I could have been. When I stood in Italy, Texas, and heard the thud of the dirt that hit the casket of my dad, I remember that conversation we had. We looked back over his life and said, if this had happened, or if I'd done this, or if I'd done this, I could have been. I don't know what you're going to do with your life. Waste it? Ha ha, play, hang, eat, drink, be merry, tomorrow we die. Go ahead, you want to, but not me, buddy. You just chalk me up as one of those fellas who wants to live and be what, by the grace of God, he could have been. And I had rather live to be 57, and that's all! And had it said of me, he went about doing good. He was what he could have been. And had it said of me, after 90 years, he lived, he died, and he rode on a donkey. Father,